Okay, we're going to call the meeting to order. The Pledge of Allegiance, Mr. Crawford, can you please lead us in the pledge?
It'd be my honor. Could you please follow after me? I pledge allegiance.
I pledge allegiance.
To the flag.
To the flag.
The United States of America. And to the Republic.
Republic.
Which stands one nation.
One nation.
Under God.
Under God.
Indivisible. Liberty.
Liberty.
Justice for all.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Crawford. So we do have a public comment. The teleconference meetings, please submit your public comment card located on the district webpage at www.mjusd.com under board before the board meeting begins. Persons wishing to address the board are requested to fill out a public comment card before the start of the meeting and give it to the secretary, board president, and the superintendent. The public may address topics not on the agenda during this section of the agenda or ask they be heard during a specific agenda item. Comments are limited to a maximum of 3 minutes per speaker, 20 minutes total time for public input on each item per board bylaw 9323. The Ralph and Brown Act prevents the Board of Trustees from responding to these comments with the exception of a clarifying question. The California Government Code Section 54954.2.A states, no action or discussion shall be undertaken on any item not appearing on the posted agenda, except that members of a legislative body or its staff may briefly respond to statements made or questions posed by persons exercising their public testimony rights under Section 54954.3. I do want to make it publicly known that all board members are present tonight. And our public comment is from Ms. Allison Hasty. Allison, are you there?
Yes, sir.
Okay, would you like to go ahead and make your comment?
Well, I'm requesting clarification on you're using teleconference rather than a Zoom meeting.
Okay, and again, as we, as I just stated, we really can't have a discussion on that, Allison.
Right, right.
But maybe you and I could talk and we could try to clarify that.
All right, and then also on your slide 6 for your PowerPoint, it mentions the COPS payment. So when you get to that point in the meeting, would you please clarify that there?
Yes, I think we could do that, Allison.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, you're very welcome. Okay. So budget item number one, informational item, business services, budget workshop. Purpose of the agenda item is to discuss the impact of COVID-19 on the state budget and subsequently the impact on the MJUSD 2020-2021 budget. Mrs. Lossing or Mr. Cena or somebody?
Thank you, Mr. Rasmussen, and good afternoon, board members. I'm glad to be here today to talk about our budget. Unfortunately, not a lot of good news, but you have your PowerPoint that was provided, and I'm going to go through the slides, and then at some key areas, I'll stop for clarifying questions. You know, granted, there's a lot of information, and it's a really deep subject. So, and we expect it to generate discussion, you know, for our workshop. And I'll just go ahead and get started with slide 2. Our purpose. Well, we know that COVID-19 has basically devastated the world. So, subsequently, an immense negative impact on our national and state economies. And so what we learned, our governor's May revision for the 2020-21 state budget, it proposes a really big negative impact on all educational budgets across the state. So we're not in it alone. It's every school district. This presentation is to provide the Board of Trustees with our most current information, and that's the May revise, and it's the negative impact to next year's budget, which will be presented to you for adoption on June 23rd. So this is going to be the preliminary information for the budget adoption after we've had a chance to synthesize the May revised proposals from the governor. Then, of course, the state will enact the budget, and we're not quite sure where that'll be, but every district is, we always use the May revise as the standard to build our budget on. On slide three, I've just prepared a little overview of the different topics we'll go over. We're going to look at this year and what some significant budget changes to our general fund on the unrestricted side. Good news there. And then we're going to look at the proposed changes for 2020-21, and we'll discuss the decrease in our revenue, and we'll look at some potential budget savings that we've been able to determine that we can apply and have that as part of our adopted budget on June 23rd. And then talking about all of this negative revenue and saving in expenses, we'll go ahead and review the reserves. We'll look at where we were at second interim, which was the March report to the board, and then go over a few budget basics because it's a workshop and it's a learning opportunity time and for the board and for our public as well. And then we're gonna take a look at a budget savings process that we'd like to implement to address the fact that we're going to be receiving less revenue than expenses that we're going to be spending next year. So we need to balance that. We need to have a balanced budget because reserves are limited. And fortunately, though, we do have a good amount of reserves that means that we have time to thoroughly review and analyze what the best reductions will be. So then, if we go on to slide four, we're going to look at the changes to this year's unrestricted general fund. And these are just the significant budget changes since March when you received the second interim report. And first of all, we have savings that appears we'll receive for special education, the special education programs. And that's to the tune of about $400,000. And that's a decrease in the contribution, which means it's a savings to our general fund. Moving on to
Penny, I'm sorry, but where are we getting the money? Where are we saving this money? Is it like less busing or what?
You know, it could probably be a lot of it in unfilled vacant positions, and then different savings that may have been achieved since school closed as well. There may have been particular things that expenses that occur while school was in session that we didn't have to or weren't able to provide, which resulted in savings. But it's a combination of a lot of things for the program, and it was a significant enough amount that I wanted to share it with you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So then we have something that is not typical for this district. We anticipate a contribution from our unrestricted general fund. We're going to transfer $1.1 million to our cafeteria fund, and that's because it needs to balance. And because of the closure of school due to COVID-19, we significantly decrease the participation, the number of school meals served, which is how they receive their revenue, and yet we still maintained all of our staff positions and those expenses. And then some of the food costs went up because of the particular type of packaging that was required and so forth. So even though we were as efficient and effective as we could be, because of the circumstances, we're going to need to contribute about $1.1 million. So that's a negative. So, but then we can keep going because we have other positives. We've looked at any non-essential facility projects that we could postpone realize the savings in this budget year. And those projects total about 300,000. And it's not that we won't do them at some point, but that they were non-essential, deemed non-essential, and that could be placed on hold without any detriment. Then the next one would be reducing our other post-employment benefit expense. And that best business practice is that school districts realize increases in the liability of paying for those. And what they are, other post-employment benefits, are the district's cost for retirees' health insurance, the district portion based on our collective bargaining agreement. And we had been trying to set aside funds to soften future liability. But given the circumstances that we're in right now, we can pull back that savings and do a method called pay as you go, so that we're only paying exactly the amount that it cost us this year, rather than saving for the future and trying to be proactive in that area. So that's a big $1.3 million savings. So then we've realized department savings from the district office department of a couple of hundred thousand. And that's been since, again, the COVID-19 outbreak, and in different areas, you know, whether it's things that we didn't have to purchase, or services we didn't have to or weren't able to provide because of school being closed. And just the fact that everybody knew, you know, we were going to be in for some hard budget time. So everybody kind of put the stop on spending, and we were able to save a couple of hundred thousand there. I left another line item for unspent budget. When we close the books, of course, there are going to be, we have thousands of budget account codes. There's going to be unspent funds in there, so there's always some savings. We don't know what it will be until we close the books, but I did put a little line there. So basically, these significant changes equal about $1.1 million to our unrestricted general fund for 1920. Some of them one time, some ongoing, but I wanted to share that because overall that's really good news for us. Did you have any, and then also, you know, it is normal and expected that the budget will change throughout the year. We're not, it's just the actuals that are finally, everything we do, adopt the budget, the first and second interim, our estimated actuals that will be presented to you, that's this year's estimated actuals that come with next year's budget on June 23rd. It's all a projection until we close the books, and then we get the actuals in September. So, and was there any questions on that slide? I know that's an awful lot of information.
Well, this is Randy Davis, and the question I would have is how firm that 1.1 is. Is it liable to go down?
Well, it's what we know at this time, and since the budget is almost finished, and we only have 2 weeks before we present it, it's pretty close. There'll be some other changes, but these were the most significant that I wanted to share. It will be positive.
Well, thank you.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and the actual amount in that 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, the sixth line down, plus other line item savings from unspent budgets, we'll know that on the 23rd.
No, that'll actually come into play for this year's budget when we close the book.
Okay,
yeah.
Right. Good.
So Penny, what is our, what's the timeline on the LCAP for this year? When do we, I think we've already started that process. I know we've done some surveys.
Well.
For Gary or.
Do you, do you want to talk about that?
Because again, I think in my mind, you know, the LCAP is supposed to drive a portion of your budget. And it seems like, I guess we're now developing developing our budget and going to approve it. And then I guess down the road, what we're going to do is to develop the LCAP for more specific on how to spend the money of the budget. Is that?
Mm-hmm. And Randy, do you want me to answer that one, you guys? Hello?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Okay, so what you're going to get is a series of things. So for this year, what we had to do, and we just completed this, and it will come to you with the budget on June 23rd. So what we did is basically an operational revisit. So what we put together is the changes that we made based on COVID and what happened. So in that, how did we address special populations? How did we address EL? What were the changes that we did to the program for this year and kind of leading into next year? And then what will happen, that'll be, you guys will see that on the 23rd. I believe final adoption is by July 15th. Then come December 15th of next year, what they're going to do is they're going to run a one-year LCAP. So everything that we did this year, stakeholder-wise, will go back out again with any revisions we make to program based on the uncertainties of next year. So once we get next year's program lined out, we'll get a budget to match it, and you'll essentially have the goals of the district will stay the same because that's kind of our mission as an entity. How we serve those goals will shift based on whatever the format of next year looks like. You'll get that one-year LCAP on December 15th to approve for the one-year cycle. And then, assuming life gets back to some level of normalcy, what'll happen then is it'll go into the new three-year LCAP cycle, and that's when we'll start with the new LCAP, assuming they haven't made any changes to template or anything else during that time.
Okay. Thank you, Rocco.
Yep.
Okay, so moving to slide five. And this again is the unrestricted general fund, and it's the 2020-21 proposed changes that we'll incorporate into our budget adoption on the 23rd. Unfortunately, the first couple of lines, we have the decrease in the LCFF, our local control funding formula, which is the biggest portion of our revenue. And due to COVID-19, there's a reduction of 7.69% from this year's amount. And that equals about $8 million. Then also in the May revise, we're going to get zero COLA for 2020-21, and that would be another $1.4 million. You may recall at second interim, our multi-year projection projected next year with a 2.31% COLA. And we won't, you know, according to the May revise, now we don't know for sure what the enacted budget will look like, but we had to build our budget based on the May revise. We have the $8 million reduction and then the 1.4 for to account for the loss of the COLA for a total of 9.4 million. And I've also put in a placeholder just to be aware that staffing for Fund 13, our cafeteria fund that we talked about a little bit earlier, staffing and other expenses may need to be reduced to match revenue. That amount will be determined based on the student meal participation, but because a contribution could be necessary, I've put a placeholder here. Without knowing that number, the other two numbers are a deficit of $9.4 million to our revenue for the 2020-21 budget year. Now, there was some good news with the May revise, and that's what I'll move on to now. Governor Newsom has proposed an equalization increase for our special ed funding. So per average daily attendance, we currently receive $359. We're probably one of the lower funded SELPAs in the state. And he proposes to equalize everybody in the state to $645 per ADA. And that would be a benefit to us on the revenue side of $2.6 million. So that's really good news, depending again on what's actually enacted in the budget. Then he also proposed, knowing that our pension costs have risen dramatically over the last few years, he's proposed to reduce the increase, and that would save us $400,000 next year. And he's proposing that for 2 years, but we're just talking about this coming year now. Then we can also continue to save that other post-employee benefit savings we were trying to achieve and continue the pay-as-you-go method, which is acceptable. And that would be a $1.3 million savings. Then we, considering the availability of other funding, we thought we could suspend next year's LCAP transfer to deferred maintenance. The general fund receives about $1.2 million. And then in the LCFF amount is a transfer of $820,000 to Fund 14 that's entitled deferred maintenance. And this would be a one-year suspension, and we would be able to rely on our routine restricted maintenance, which is a requirement and which has a budget of about $4 million now. It does have our salary and benefits of our maintenance crew, but there's a lot of additional funds for routine maintenance. And then it appears that our deferred maintenance fund will have probably around $1 million balance as we end the year. And so we'd be able to use that as well. Then moving on, we thought we could postpone a school bus purchase. We typically budget one per year for replacement because we have so many older buses in the fleet. That's a savings of a little less than $200,000. And the good news there is that the Feather River Air Quality Management District has provided us some grants for four other buses. So those would be no cost to us. So we feel pretty comfortable postponing the purchase of a school bus for a year. And then we would look at a 7.5% decrease to our district office department budget. That would save us about $700,000. And then looking at a 7% decrease to our school site discretionary budget. And that would be about a $400,000 savings. So all of these would increase our general fund balance by $6.8 million. So in the wording on the side of the slide, then that means that we would still have a deficit of $2.6 million, but then I make note that there's federal CARES Act funds that we've heard different amounts of what that might be. We don't know what that is yet, so I did not include it. But we have heard a $3.2 million, and we've heard $4.7 million, and that would be one-time money, you know, to the best of what we know right now.
Can you explain what CARES, the CARES Act is, or the money, where it's coming from?
It's federal money to fund the COVID expenses that states are going to receive, and then they were going to base that on distributing it based on district Title I needs. And we have very high needs for socioeconomically disadvantaged students, those that are low performing. And so when it was calculated based on the Title I allocation method, school services provided a $3.2 million amount. And then CSBA came out with a different figure recently of $4.7 million, but I think that it's still up in the air what it's going to be. And we should know that when the budget's enacted. So we'll be able to make that adjustment and it'll be positive. So that's a good thing. So these changes are based on the May revision. There'll be, you know, other information that goes with our full budget, but these were the most impactful that I thought would be important to share with you during the workshop today.
Well, this is Brandon Davis, and I just wondered when you put that 7.5 decrease in district office and the school sites, do you have a plan for where that would come from? Those savings.
Yes, we were going to decrease the district office department, their materials and supplies budget by 7.5%. And then on the site, they have a few different types of discretionary money. They have lottery money. They have some LCAP money. And they have then another different pot of LCAP money. And then they have some athletic budget. And we looked at the overall amount and talked to a couple of principals. And I think that based on the significance of the overall reduction to our revenue, that most sites were probably okay with a 7% reduction at this time.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, at this time. Thank
right.
you.
Uh-huh.
Hi, Penny. Hey, it's Jeff Boone. Hey, uh-huh. just one observe. Hi, how are you? One
well.
Observance and one question.
Okay.
Just surprises me on deferred maintenance, as much work as we have to do in our schools, that we don't spend that money each year. It blows me away. I think this is the second year in a row we've had over $1 million left over. I mean, it's a good thing this year because we need the money, but with the amount of money that we have, I don't understand why we're not spending that money on the deferred maintenance. Second thing is, on school bus purchases, kind of, you know, a little bit different than a school bus purchase. With the way the school year could look and the, you know, the way that they're going to have to bus kids if we do bus kids to schools, and the way the CDC guidelines are, what would we do in that case where they're talking like one student every seat or one student every other seat? Where would we get those buses from? How would we fund that? What would the expense look like? And where would we get bus drivers from? Would we have to, you know, get charter buses, or how would we do that?
Well, I don't.
I'm just looking ahead a little bit, but I mean, it might be something looking too far ahead.
No, Jeff, you're right on the money. In fact, we're having that very same discussion tomorrow. The guidelines that have come out from the state and other county offices, you know, have you know, prescriptions on what is safe for students on, you know. And so actually tomorrow morning we're meeting with transportation and having that very discussion. And as you know, throughout the district, there are varying needs according to geography, you know, where schools are located, as well as with, you know, grade level. So you're right on it. And we don't have the absolute answer, but we're working on that issue, as well as, you know, the plethora of issues that you know, each question, you know, catalyzes five more. So we're working on that. Hopefully next Tuesday, we'll be able to speak, you know, with based on discussion and information.
Okay, thanks, Gary. Yeah, I just know that can be a huge impact on our budget, or could be a huge impact on our budget, but thank you.
Yes, thank you.
And then, Penny, this is Travis, Director of Buildings and Grounds. Would you like me to speak on behalf of the deferred maintenance question?
To hear it.
You know what, Travis? How about if we, once we get done, we can come back?
Absolutely, no problem.
Once we get done with the presentation, we'll come back. So we'll write that and we'll revisit when we're done with the PowerPoint. We'll come back and address it.
Absolutely, no problem.
Yeah. No, thank you.
Mm-hmm. So are we ready to move to slide 6?
Yes.
So this is a review of where we were at second interim, our reserves, a snapshot of this year, and beginning balance, and then the ending balance, and then the components that make up that ending balance. So the unassigned is the amount that actually would be available, the 13.7 million. And then the difference, the 30.2, to get to the bottom line, you have to add back in that 5 million that was a combination of balance and transfer from the general fund to fund 17 for the future COPS payment to get to 29.4. Now that'll be different when we have our estimated actuals, but as you saw earlier, we had some positive information for changes in the budget for 19-20, which is this year, and that's what these reserves are. So just for some general information, I added on the side of the spreadsheet, a 1 month of district salary and benefits is about $8.5 million on average, and on average 1 month of all expenses is about $11 million. And then beginning in 2023 and going for 20 years, the district is obligated to pay an annual certificates of participation payment of $2.8 million. And what that's for is the financing of prior facility projects. We had a general obligation bond, and there were many facilities developed at multiple sites in the district, and there was the bond money, then there was some state money that applied, and then there was this certificate of participation, which was another way to help finance those facility projects. And unfortunately, we have to pay certificates of participation back. We don't have to pay back bond money. The taxpayers pay that. And then the state money that we received, we don't have to pay back. But the certificates of participation is a financial tool that, yes, we do have to pay it back. So, but if you might recall, just to add to that, we recently, the board approved a request for proposals for financial advisory services, and one of the first things we'll be doing when we choose our financial advisor firm is to look at refinancing that COPS payment, and in the low interest rate environment, we should be able to save, I'm hoping, several hundred thousand dollars a year in payment. So that would be a really good thing because we have to plan for this payment, and it'll be part of our multi-year projection with this budget adoption because it begins that second year out. And if you recall, multi-year, the state looks at our financial position in the current year and the subsequent 2 years, and you know, our ability to pay our expenses in that time period. And then a new multi-year projection, which I'm looking forward to, will be included with the adopted budget on June 23rd. That'll show us where all of this information I'm providing you where it lands us. Are we ready to move to budget basics?
Please.
Yep.
Okay, that's on slide 7, and it's basically, I wanted to just remind everyone that, and I think I might have already mentioned it, that each year we have our annual budget. It has to be prepared, made available for public viewing, and then discussed during a public hearing prior to the governing board adopting it. And there's education codes that require that. So we make sure we do that every year. Our budget's always built on the, based on the information that we know at the time. And that's typically making the final adjustments based on the May revise. And then the budget, once adopted, will change based on the enacted state budget. I've never known one to be exactly what the May revise said. So we make an adjustment for that, and then we have a formal budget report at first interim that's taking a snapshot of where the budget is as of October 31st. Then the fiscal department does all the preparation, and then the board's presented with that first interim in December. And then we do the same thing again. We take the snapshot on January 31st, and then the fiscal department prepares everything, and the board's presented with the second interim report on March 15th each year. Then when we see the final look at each year's budget, when we do our estimated actuals, that is presented with the adopted budget for the next year, which is what we're gonna see June 23rd. And then the fiscal department will spend all summer closing the books, and we'll get what actually happened. So the budget is always a projection and changing throughout the year. And then we get our actual of what really happened, and that's presented by September 15th each year. And typically we have some budget savings at year end due again to all those budget accounts that may not be fully expended. And we do have thousands of account codes. And then moving on to slide 8, we've talked about different funds of the district, and the general fund is always our main operating fund. That's where our local control funding formula revenue comes in, and where all most of the daily operations of the district occur is in the general fund. We do have other funds, and I look at those sort of like different bank accounts. Like you could have different bank accounts that are these. Other funds are for very specific purposes and may only be used for those purposes, like our cafeteria fund, our child development fund, our charter fund for our MCAA, our deferred maintenance fund, you know, our developer fee fund, and so on. And then if we go back and we look at our main operating fund, our general fund, there are two sides to it. There's the unrestricted side and the restricted side of the budget. The unrestricted side is revenue there is available for any purpose. On the restricted side, however, we get revenue that's for very specific purposes that and can only be used for that. And then again, if a restricted program were to have more expense than revenue, they all have to balance. So then we would have to contribute from the unrestricted side over to the restricted side to balance those programs. And an example of that would be our special education program. And then I always like to add that we have a really outstanding special education program. It's not due to inefficiency or ineffectiveness. It's just because no district is fully funded for their special education program. So then moving to slide 9, I prepared just some examples so that we could see what kind of revenues and expenses we're talking about with the unrestricted and the restricted. On the unrestricted side, the LCFF funds and then the lottery funds. We do have a small amount of lottery that's for instructional materials, and that resides over on the restricted side. But for the most part, the lottery is unrestricted. and a lot of that goes out to our school site. And then expenses on the unrestricted side, it's things like paper and pencils. It's our utilities, the PG&E bills. Most of our teacher positions are from the unrestricted side. And then all of our principal positions fall on the unrestricted side of the budget. Some examples of restricted revenues, all of our federal programs that are Title I, Title II, the special education is a restricted program. And then things like our routine restricted maintenance is restricted. Some of the expenses that fall on the restricted side are things like paraeducators that are funded with Title I, our special education teachers, and then things that would be used for the maintenance of our facilities, heat and air unit filters, because they fall under that restricted revenue of routine restricted maintenance. And if we go ahead and look at next year, we're going to need budget savings. And in order to achieve those budget savings, we need to reduce expenses or raise revenue, but that could be unlikely. So the savings that we're going to need to achieve, they have certain requirements. They must be legal. Some of our expenses support legal requirements and can't be eliminated. And I put things like routine restricted maintenance. There's other examples. The savings, budget savings, must be non-negotiable because we have collective bargaining agreements that are in place and things are set based on those. So that's not an area where we could achieve savings easily. And then the savings must be on the unrestricted side of the budget because remember those restricted monies are for those specific purposes. And then moving right along to what we see as a proposing a budget savings process for next year, I'll just run through these. We would begin, you know, immediately or beginning July 1st as the first day of next year. We want to include as many stakeholders as possible in the process. And then one of the first things would be to establish a timeline so that the different actions have a benchmark timeline as to when we need to achieve them. And then we would request the board approval of that timeline at our July 21st board meeting. We need to determine a method to gather cost savings ideas from our stakeholders. Then we would, once we receive all the ideas, we need to cost them out. And so the fiscal department would be given that task for providing a dollar amount to the cost saving ideas, if it's possible to do so. And then we would look at sharing the information that is the idea and the cost saving amount with our various stakeholders. We'd need to meet with different stakeholder groups and help have them prioritize the potential savings from all the ideas generated. And then we would try to assemble the list of priorities that then we would share the list with the Board of Trustees because the board, of course, has the final decision. And then next would be implementing the budget savings within the timeline that we'd established on the July 21st meeting. So it'll be a process over the next year. And we would probably try to have everything completed so that we could build it into budget development for the following year in a timely enough time period.
The question I have for you, this is Randy Davis, is that given the uncertainty with the state allocation for the following year, for the 22-23, how would you establish, what number would you use for the state? The same as this year or for the 2020-21?
You mean as far as how much reduction we need?
Well, what what number would you use? What amount would you be using to start those formulations? Would you be using the 2020-21 allocation?
Yes, we're going to look at what the budget, adopted budget looks like as far as the amount of deficit spending, and then we'll have the prepared multi-year projections, and I believe the May revise had a zero COLA for the following year and possibly for that third year. So we're going to see what that impact is as we play those numbers out in our multi-year projection, because we know that we have automatic expense increases. You know, we have, and the, you know, our people are our biggest asset. You know, they also are the biggest expense. And so we have certain, you know, requirements to give them step and column increases, which they fully deserve, but it is a cost to the district. All of that type of information goes into the multi-year projection. And when we take a look at that, it'll give us an idea of where we need to go.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And then we have our, finally, our list of projects that we can place on hold without any detrimental impact. And I might say, and I don't think it's premature to say, that the biggest project on here is at Linda Elementary School, a landscape, turf, and soccer area. And we're hoping that we might get some funding from the Yuba Water Agency to help us with that as part of the district's water conservation efforts that would be directly in line of a benefit for their agency.
Has that been proposed?
We're working on it. They've delayed they had a June 30th board meeting scheduled, but it's been delayed. So, but we do have that, this, and some other irrigation. It's probably Mr. Barnett that could speak better to it, but fixture replacements throughout the district. And
I am Travis Barnett, Director of Buildings and Grounds. Yes, we are looking at water conservation efforts with low flow urinals, toilets, metering faucets. We're looking at adding, mulch around all planter beds, looking to medicine drip systems, things like that to that extent to reduce our water consumption. And we're presenting that to the Water Board in hopes that they'll look at some of these water conservation measures and realize that if they invest or if we can get a grant or a partnership with them, that we can start changing out a lot of these things around the district, which would eliminate some of these fixtures that are over 30 to 40 years old.
Well, I would certainly think the Linda landscaping project would be a high candidate for conservation and maintenance of the facility.
Absolutely. And we're looking at Linda, and that's one of the projects we put on there. We've also put a couple of the larger fields that we're still flood irrigating that aren't on timers. So our hopes are that we can appeal to the Water Board and let them know, you know, that obviously we're not the most efficient. And although we are using some of these fields and it's, you know, they're being watered through a well, they're still concerned about the water table underneath the ground. So all those things have been looked at and we've kind of thrown them at them to see which ones they feel would be a great investment for them for a return on investment for the water conservation efforts.
Great. Thank you.
While Travis was there, did you want to talk about the deferred maintenance budget also, Travis?
Mr. Smith, Ms. Lossing, I can go ahead and speak on that behalf. So the question, if I recall, was, you know, why we still have money remaining in there and it wasn't being expended. So we were strategically going through these project lists through the district. And if many of the board members recall, we have the chiller over at Lyndhurst High School that has been on its last leg for several years, and we've been limping that along. So kind of strategically what we've done is each year we fire it up, we kind of have deferred maintenance money kind of in the coffers, so to speak. So we've encumbered the money in other projects, but each time we fire that chiller up, we're trying to make sure that we have enough in deferred maintenance if it doesn't fire back up, that we have an action plan, which would be bringing in portable chillers, things like that, or get a repair. So a lot of the stuff, when you see that the money kind of sitting there, it's technically already been encumbered in other projects. It's just we kind of push it to the limits before we start the contracts again. And if you remember, right before COVID, I'm trying to think, maybe it was in December, we kind of went over a project list. And a lot of those projects, that's where that deferred maintenance was going to be encumbered. Obviously, with the changing climate right now with COVID-19, it's kind of sitting there, and that's why that money is kind of available to go back in the general fund, like Ms. Lawson was saying. But it was basically put off to the side strategically for the event we had a catastrophic failure at Lyndhurst. We've already submitted for emergency funding through OPSC, so we've exhausted that resource. So in the event that that goes down, we don't have the funding to repair it. So that is why we had that. We kind of keep pushing it year to year.
Thank you, Travis.
You're welcome.
Are there any other comments or questions from board members?
Yeah, Randy, I have a couple of questions. Back to slide 11, it says number 2, include as many stakeholders as possible in the process. What kind of, what stakeholders are we looking at? What's our list of stakeholders?
Well, it could be all of our employees, and that would include everybody, because a good idea can come from anyone. I know that. It can be different groups like our management group, our district advisory committee. It can be our different bargaining units. We welcome input from all of them and their ideas for cost savings. We just want to make it broad, and I'm thinking that the method of delivery of that would be a survey so that we can present that and then collect the ideas and then cost them out. And then again, once we collect them, we may have to categorize them because again, there could be ideas that we legally we have to provide so we couldn't reduce, or it could be their idea falls in an expense that is on the restricted side of the budget. So that's not really where the savings is that we need. It could be it could be something that's part of our collective bargaining agreements that we couldn't unilaterally just make the reduction. So we'll have that process once we receive the information and different cost savings ideas from anyone and everyone.
Thank you, Penny. I have one other question. We're going to look at some additional costs if we go to, like, especially a modified school plan, modified school day, busing students maybe morning, afternoon. Will you be able to put together some kind of a cost analysis of what that's going to cost the district? I mean, we're talking all this PPE and stuff, which I understand the state's going to cover a lot of that stuff, but are we going to be able to put together a cost analysis in the near future of what that may look like? And then the other thing is, if we do go to a distance learning plan or a modified distance learning plan, or, students coming in, this may be a, question for Gary, students coming in morning and afternoon, what's our MOU going to look like with the teachers, and how are we doing in that process?
That's an ongoing discussion. That's why we've been getting input and having discussions with teachers and MUTA leadership, and taking those ideas. And next week, sharing what ideas make sense given our particular, dynamics, as well as the state guidelines and public health guidelines, and bringing that forward. And once a direction is set by the board, then negotiating the impacts and the effects of that plan. And part of that plan inherent is it is being able to transition from one instructional delivery system to another, you know, in response to the spread of the virus. So we've been collecting parts, you know, the past couple months, and we're in terms of, you know, and hearing sort of what might be ideas, what might be guidelines and processes, to now that there are models out there, and discussing those models with people from specific areas, different areas throughout the district, and hearing what the needs are, and then like we said, you know, meeting with the transportation, nutrition, all the different contributing groups. We have a pandemic response team, which is basically all the departments looking at it through their view of the elephant of what this looks like. And so we are no different than any district in California in terms of coming together and figuring out, presenting the best model we have at this time, and bringing it to the board next week, and having people take a look at it and get input, and ideally set a direction, and then negotiate based on the impacts and the effects of that direction.
Yeah, thank you, Gary. It's going to be a tough road to hoe ahead. If we all had a crystal ball, it'd be a lot easier. But anyways, thank you.
No, that's you're absolutely right, and you know that's why we appreciate everybody's time and attention today, because by having this and hopefully, you know, these presentations are presented in a way that's clear, and that people understand, so that everybody understands the working parts. Because so far we've learned the more people we get, the more ideas pop out and move it forward. Yes, we're all in it together, and we're trying to do the best thing we can for students and families.
So I just had a comment too, kind of on the same lines as Jeff was talking about stakeholders. Certainly think that it would be important for us to try to include our parents that are part of that stakeholder group. Talking to some parents through the distance learning, I think we have some learning programs that we currently support through the district. I think one of them is Lexia that we have. And you know, the comment was that this is a very important program to help their student progress in the distance learning program. So, you know, if we are looking at making cuts, I think we certainly need to have parent input also.
And I neglected to mention our parent group, but they are one of our very most important groups. I should have mentioned them.
Jeff, kind of follow up on the other question. We were talking about buses and bus drivers. You know, we're having such a difficult time even now filling our bus driver slots. It scares me to see what that's going to be in the future. Are there any other comments or questions or?
From board members.
Not, Mr.
Well, yeah, I just wanted to throw out there just a couple of other things to keep in mind in terms of, we're waiting for clarification from the state of how average daily attendance is going to be assessed Also, instructional minutes, if there's going to be any change in instructional minutes. And then also another factor, these are all just things that add to the merry-go-round. So there's not solutions here, it's just other questions that we're looking for answers from the state in particular, or that we'll be in a wait and see, or that we're also trying to factor in. Another is moving the tax, you know, the due date from April 15th to July, you know, whether the revenue that's generated, if that's going to generate mid-year cuts in 2021. And then everybody, we're all, our focus in this presentation is on the May revise, the governor's May revise, and that's what we're focusing on. Many people know and see that the state legislature, you know, have a different proposal, and the two branches of government are working on that. And so how that the state legislature actually calculating that, Marysville Joint Unified would get a 4.5% increase in funding because of the formula they're using. And then of course the CARES Act, you know, when that money from the federal government may come, and then, you know, the amounts vary. So we're trying to get a real good look at the landscape, and in the instructional models, we're trying to get a real good look at the landscape so that we can make the best decisions and best informed decisions. So tonight we're trying effort to help everyone know and understand what the budget is and what the contributing factors are, and information we're looking for and decisions we'll need to make.
Well, the one comment I have in this arena of looking at cost savings, and one of the things I saw Gary recommend is for the board to attend the CSCA meeting in Anaheim, if it does go forth. And I would strongly advise the board to consider not attending that conference. I know it may not be a great big savings, but I think from a strategic standpoint, I think we need to show that we're going to do everything we can as a district to cut back where we think we should, and try to protect, as you've already said, the students and the teachers moving forward. Thank you.
So Randy, I thank you for that comment. There is a little information that I think will be coming out regarding that. And I agree with you. I think we really need to take a look at it from a financial standpoint. And there may be other options virtually if board members would like to you know, attend it that direction, and maybe even pay for it out of our own pocket if we think it's valuable enough. So thank you
very much. Thank you.
Any other comments or discussion? Just to carry on. Ms. Lawson?
No, just thank you for your patience. And we'll have more information as it becomes available, and certainly from the standpoint of minimizing impacts all the way around, that we appreciate your leadership and your trust that we'll present the best ideas possible to keep our district moving forward.
And one last thank you. I'd like to thank Brian Williams and his team for everything they're doing on the IT end. So Brian, thank you. Meeting adjourned.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
See you later.
Thank you.